When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily for October 12th, 2017. This is Peter Serretta, and on today's show, we're going to be talking about Top Gun 2, Ridley Scott's Alien Covenant sequel, how Thor Ragnarok will be the first of a planned Hulk trilogy arc, Creed 2 gets a surprising director, Disney makes it easier for you to watch other studios' movies digitally, and how Disney and Lucasfilm decide Star Wars spoilers. And the Disney animated film Gigantic has been canceled. We'll tell you about that. At the water cooler, I'll be talking about a strolling magic showdown and what that is. And in the spoiler room, we'll be talking about the ending of Blade Runner 2049. That'll be at the end of the show, so don't worry about spoilers. You can check out when we hit that segment. Joining me on today's show are Slash Film writers Ben Pearson.
Hey, what's up?
And Chris Evangelista.
Hello.
Guys, before we get started, we have a couple of housekeeping notes. Some of you may have noticed there was no official episode yesterday, and that was because we published an emergency podcast analyzing the new Star Wars trailer, and there just wasn't enough news going on, so we counted that as yesterday's episode. Tomorrow, I'm going to be away on a set visit, which I cannot talk about. So there's not going to be an episode tomorrow, but there'll be an episode on Friday morning instead of Thursday afternoon, if that makes sense. Probably the worst decision about starting this podcast is calling it Slash Film Daily, because it makes us have to produce a show every single weekday. And we're still planning on doing that, but sometimes schedules can be very tough. I mean, I'm going to be on a set visit. Ben's going to be in the air tomorrow. It's a cluster of a day tomorrow. So, yeah. Anyways, let's get to today's show, because we have a ton of stuff to get to, and I imagine that we're going to go over our time limit because there's a lot of news. But before we get to the news, let's come over to the water cooler. There's something I wanted to tell you guys about. Last night I went to the Magic Castle, and a couple times a year they have this thing called the Strolling Magic Showdown, and it's this competition. It's held only for members and their guests. Basically, if you are a member of the Magic Castle, a magician member, you can compete in it. I did not compete. I wanted to check it out and see what it was like. I was a judge. If you're a member, if you're a magician member, you can be a judge. And basically, you sit at a table with other people and other judges. And there's, you know, I think there was 60 or 70 judges in this big room that they have at the Magic Castle. And basically, the magicians, there was like about 30 magicians. They go table to table, table hopping, showing magic tricks. And basically, at the end of the night, every judge picks, you know, their top three favorite magicians, and those guys get, you know, some prizes, some recognition, name on a trophy that's on display in the Magic Castle, and pins that they can wear around the castle that are bragging rights. I mean, not a lot of, not like, you know, $1 million at the end of the rainbow, but it's just fun. It's a lot of, it's not the people that are paid to perform in the Magic Castle. It's a lot of members who, you know, do magic as a hobby. And we saw, I think, 21 magicians in the course of this 90 minutes. So we missed about 9 of them or 8 of them, something like that. One of the magicians, after doing his act, was cleaning up his stuff. And he said, by the way, big fan of the podcast, which I thought was pretty cool. But I got to see some amazing stuff. I would talk about it more, but we got so much news. It would be a shame to take up the time on this water cooler. So let's just get into the news. we've gotten some details on a couple sequels that are in development. Some surprising details about Top Gun 2 and Alien Covenant sequel. Ben, you wrote the story for SlashFilm.com. What do we know?
Yes. Tony Scott, the director of the original Top Gun, was originally going to direct Top Gun 2, but unfortunately he died in 2012. So that project has been sort of in limbo ever since then. When he was still attached to direct the movie, he hinted at the idea that Top Gun 2 would involve drones in some way, maybe Tom Cruise's Maverick either flying drones or fighting against them or something. So drones has been a big, the idea of drones have been sort of a big part of the conversation around Top Gun 2 in the intervening 5 or 6 years. So the project has been rewritten a bunch of times, and Joseph Kaczynski, the guy who directed Tom Cruise in the movie Oblivion, is going to be directing Top Gun 2, and he is out promoting a new movie now. Somebody asked him on the interview circuit about Top Gun 2 and sort of what he thought about this drone concept and if he still planned on including it in the movie, and he said, quote, "Personally, I would never want to see a movie about drones. For me, Top Gun has always been not about fighter planes, it's been about fighter pilots." So that sounds to me like the idea of drones, after years and years of, you know, being attached with, you know, sort of linked with this concept of Top Gun 2, has now been kicked to the sidelines. Cruise himself has talked a lot about how they are looking to sort of recapture the same vein, the same tone as the original. It's going to be like a competition film, much like the first one was. So this sounds like good news for people who were maybe not thrilled at the idea of seeing Cruise, you know, pilot a drone from a control room somewhere. It sounds like he's actually going to be up in the air and, you know, front and center in the action on this.
I still think that drones are going to be a part of this. It's, you know, so much what is going on in today's world. I think it's going to be that these Top Gun guys are kind of being phased out and drones have kind of taken over, and I'm betting that there's going to be something, you know, drones are outlawed or drones can't be used on specific missions in specific country, whatever, and they're going to have to bring these guys back, and, you know, him maybe mentoring a young fighter pilot. That's what I'm betting, but who knows.
Yeah. And then also Ridley Scott is directing a follow-up to Alien Covenant. Who knows how many Alien movies he's going to make when all is said and done, but he is talking about the next movie. And when somebody asked him about what his approach was going to be for that next film, which is still untitled at this point, he said, quote, "I think the evolution of the alien himself is nearly over, but what I was trying to do was transcend and move to another story, which would be taken over by the AIs. The world that the AI might create as a leader if he finds himself on a new planet. We have actually quite a big layout for the next one." So that's his latest update on where he's thinking about taking the Alien franchise. If you have seen Prometheus or Alien Covenant, this probably isn't that much of a surprise, considering how much Scott really loves the characters of David and Walter, who were played by Michael Fassbender in those movies. And he seems far more interested in their mentality and the exploration of them as characters and their relationship with humanity than he does about any of the human characters in those recent Alien films. So it's not too surprising, but it's definitely interesting that a movie with the Alien name on it is probably not going to feature that many more iterations of the physical alien itself.
See, this is so disappointing to me. Because, you know, I go to an Alien movie for aliens. The last Alien movie, Alien Covenant, I was highly disappointed in because, you know, of who the bad guy is in that movie. And, you know, once they got to the aliens, it was fun for me. That last half an hour is a lot of fun. But I feel like the middle portion of that movie, because it's kind of that swerve towards what Ridley Scott wants to do and not what the franchise is, didn't right. work for me. What do you guys think?
Chris, how about you?
Well, so I really liked Alien Covenant. I'm one of the few people who liked it. I know a lot of people did not care for it. I do agree that it is a little deceptive to sort of shoehorn this plot into an Alien film, but at the same time, I really kind of like the David plot. I really like the way Michael Fassbender plays that character. And I kind of agree with Ridley Scott that there's really not that much even left to do with the aliens at this point? Are you just going to keep being sort of derivative if you keep sort of just retelling the same story over and over again? So I don't know. I personally kind of like the idea, but I can also see people just being annoyed that he basically used, it's sort of like a backdoor pilot. He just used the Alien franchise to launch this whole new thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it seems like something that it's definitely something Scott is interested in. And the idea of humans meeting their creators or you know, technology meeting its creators even, is a theme that's run throughout his entire body of work, really. So anything where he can sort of laser focus in on that sounds like something that he is going to gravitate towards. And it sounds like this is, you know, this has become his pet franchise where he can explore those ideas in a more full, you know, like a sort of a deeper way than he has been able to in any other movies that he's worked on so far.
The weird thing is I'm not against him exploring other things. You know, I liked the David character in the first movie. I liked Prometheus as a whole. I'm an outlier on that. I love the mystery and them going towards, you know, what you're talking about, a man meeting his creator. And it seemed like they kind of abandoned that in this film a bit, with, you know, like one whole flashback sequence. I don't know. I wanted to see them go more in that direction, but we'll have to see. We'll have to see where this goes. One thing that we're not going to see is a Hulk movie. As you know, Universal owns the rights to the Hulk movies. Marvel Studios has the rights to have Hulk in their films. But that's not going to stop them from doing a three-part story arc in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Chris, you wrote this up for SlashFilm.com. What do we know?
Right. So Mark Ruffalo, he was saying basically Kevin Feige pulled him aside and said, if we were going to do a Hulk standalone movie, which, as you just said, they can't do, but if we were going to do it, what would you like to be in the Hulk standalone movie? And Mark Ruffalo basically laid out a bunch of ideas. He doesn't say what those ideas are, but he laid out a bunch of ideas. And the idea became basically to put those standalone Hulk ideas into the next few Marvel films. So the, Thor Ragnarok is going to be the first part of a basically three-story arc for the Hulk, starting with there and continuing on into Avengers Infinity War.
Where can we see this going? Do you have any idea of like what this arc is?
I mean, it's the details are very vague, and I haven't seen Ragnarok yet, so I don't know. I don't really know what they're hinting at, but Mark Ruffalo does say it ties into the fact that the Hulk talks now, basically. In, you know, in the previous Marvel films, the Hulk didn't really have much to say, you know, other than like one or two words. But as the trailers for Ragnarok show, he's actually having, you know, full conversations here. And he says that actually sort of ties into the whole arc thing about building the character up, separating the character from the way it's been, the character's been presented in the past. So that's sort of like a hint. It's not much of a hint, but that's what Mark Ruffalo said.
Yeah, I have seen Ragnarok. I'm not going to reveal anything that hasn't been revealed, but it has already been said that Hulk, since we last saw him, since he went into space, he hasn't been Bruce Banner since then. So it's been, what, a couple years of Hulk being the Hulk and not being Bruce Banner? It's the opposite of what has happened, where it's been mostly Bruce Banner and, you know, him turning into the metaphorical werewolf at night. Do you know what I mean? Like, so I think that's going to have some play in it. It'll be interesting to see what they do, because he's talking about, obviously, the Infinity War, the two Infinity War films as the other two parts of this arc, right?
Right, yes, yeah. Correct.
Okay. Also, news came 2 days ago, right around the time that the Star Wars trailer dropped, and that was that Creed 2 now has a director. And that director's name is not Ryan Coogler. I am so torn about this because the director who is going to helm this Creed sequel is Sylvester Stallone. You know, he's not a stranger to directing. He's proven himself directing Rocky films. He directed Rocky 2, 3, 4. I believe, you know, he kind of got criticized for those. He found his redemption with Rocky Balboa. I don't know. The reason why I liked Creed so much was because of what Ryan Coogler brought to it. He announced on Instagram that Michael B. Jordan is going to return for Creed II, which he's going to direct. We do know that he's been teasing that we will see the return of Dolph Lundgren's character, Ivan Drago, and possibly, like, you know, someone related to him. That's all we know about the story. What do you guys think? Is now that Ryan Coogler is not attached to direct this film, are you interested any less than you were previously?
Man, it's weird because I love Creed, and I think Coogler was the perfect guy to bring that story to life and sort of pivot that franchise in such a fascinating way. But I feel like if Coogler can't do it, which it seems like he can't, and whether that's because he's going to be directing another Black Panther movie or he can't, you know, get away from, like, production on this new movie has to begin during the time that he's doing press for Black Panther, whatever the reason is, I feel like Stallone is the second best person that I would want to direct it. You know, he has the most experience with this franchise, you know, more than anyone. He started the whole damn thing. So, and looking at the list of movies that he's directed far more Rocky movies than any other movies that he's done. And he definitely has a handle on what this franchise is and what it can be. I hope that he's learned the lessons that everyone else has taken away from Creed, which is Stallone at this point is much better in a supporting capacity. And this franchise should belong to Michael B. Jordan at this point. So as long as he doesn't try to, you know, overextend his reach as Rocky, I think he understands the legacy of this character and that it means a lot to a lot of people. But I think he also knows that it's also a whole new story for a whole new generation. So I'm you know, cautiously optimistic.
You think he could shoehorn himself as Rocky in, like, flashbacks? That's what you're suggesting?
Well, I mean, it's possible. I don't know. Yeah, we'll see.
Chris, any thoughts on this?
I mean, yeah, I loved Creed. I thought, you know, and I thought one of the reasons Creed works so well is because it wasn't a Rocky story. You know, even though Rocky is a big part of that movie, it was, you know, Michael B. Jordan's character's story. And Ryan Coogler just found a way to basically inject a whole new life into that franchise. And, you know, I like Stallone. I like Rocky Balboa. I think that's one of the best films in that franchise. I do worry that his ego will get the better of him and he'll try and make it more of a Rocky sequel than a Creed sequel. And I do worry that might happen. I hope it doesn't. I hope he knows better than that. But I also feel like, as much as I like Stallone, he's always seemed like an actor who has this sort of ego where he's not really able to understand that he needs to sort of step aside and let someone else take the reins. I mean, I remember reading stories during the making of Creed, he kept trying to sort of influence it more than was initially intended. So, but who knows? I mean, it might work out.
By the way, I remember during production of Creed, he Instagrammed a photo of the script on, like, a table, and it was on its last page, and people zoomed into it and saw the spoiler of the ending of that last movie. So he's not the smartest with social media as well.
No.
Moving on, Disney Movies Anywhere is a service that lets you, when you buy a physical movie, you can unlock it on your computer, on your iPad, on your Apple TV, on your Amazon account. It goes across a bunch of different services. It's better than these just digital copies that just unlock it on one service. It unlocks it on all of them. And we have learned that basically, they are going to allow other studios to use that technology. So Disney is going to be allowing other studios for you to be able to unlock movies digitally across all your platforms. Ben, you wrote this for SlashFilm.com. What do we know?
So Bloomberg released this report that said that 20th Century Fox, Universal Pictures, and Warner Brothers have come on board for a newly branded Movies Anywhere app or website, or probably a combination of both, because that's currently what Disney Movies Anywhere is. It's an app and a site that you can visit. And yeah, it's basically all of these studios are coming together Lionsgate is apparently interested. Sony, there's no word yet on their involvement, but I've heard some stuff that they might be interested as well. Paramount might end up joining later, but they're currently sort of out in the cold because of financial disagreements over their involvement in the whole thing. But yeah, I guess there was a rivalry between Disney Movies Anywhere app, which launched in 2014, and Ultraviolet, which was the sort of rival platform that was backed by a lot of the other studios. And Peter, you were telling me that Disney seemed to really get the tech right when it comes to Disney Movies Anywhere. They really, you know, sort of cracked the code and found a way to make it super easy and intuitive and just like a good user experience. Whereas Ultraviolet was largely despised from, you know, by consumers. And I've heard so many complaints about that service. I've never really used it myself, but I only heard bad things basically about Ultraviolet.
I would actually pick up a Blu-ray in the store and not buy it because I see that the digital copy was Ultraviolet. That's how much I hated Ultraviolet. Because once you unlock your movie in Ultraviolet, I've heard it's gotten better in recent years, but there's only certain apps you can use to watch it, and they're kind of clunky and don't work well. And the thing I love about Disney Movies Anywhere is, you know, it basically, when I buy a movie on iTunes, I can watch it on Amazon. I can watch it on, you know, all the different services. I can download it onto my iPad. Like, it's not locked into one place. And also Disney Movies Anywhere, I'm not sure if the other studios are going to do this, but as you buy and unlock movies, you get these points, these reward points that you can basically, which I haven't used, but sometimes they'll have like kind of swag, like you can get a hat or like a poster or like, you know, limited edition poster or whatever. And you can use those points to kind of get those things sent to you. Yeah. So it's kind of cool. Chris, have you had any experience with Disney Movies Anywhere or Ultraviolet?
I'm sort of old school and I prefer the physical media, but I recently tried to use Ultraviolet for the Close Encounters of the Third Kind Blu-ray. And I could not get it to work to save my life. And so I said, this is why I'm going to stick with physical media. So I'm not, you know, I'm not the most up to date on that sort of stuff. So that's me, though. I know some people love the streaming versions.
Now, I know both Ben and you are of that same mindset. I would say, guys, there's expiration dates on these digital codes. At least, at very least, go to the website and unlock them to your account. Or if you aren't, there's actually a lot of websites out there that you can actually go and sell your digital codes, and people will buy those digital codes for like $5-6.
Yeah, I should start doing that because they just basically sit, so I don't use them.
Yeah, but you should, if you're not going to sell them, you should unlock them, because I think the future, as much as you guys are fighting against it, is going to be digital, and then one day you're not going to want to have to buy those movies again. I mean, I'm assuming you probably will have to, because there's going to be something that comes out after 4K that's going to be amazing, and they're not going to give it to us for free. But just why not? It takes 5 seconds. That's my public service message.
That's a good point.
Moving on. We've been talking a lot about spoilers. Actually, we've gotten a lot of emails from you about your reaction to our spoiler discussion, especially around Star Wars. We're going to try to get to that in a mailbag segment in the future, but we just don't have the time to do it on today's episode. But around that, it's recently been revealed how Disney actually decides what they consider to be a Star Wars spoiler and what is not, and how they protect us from these spoilers. Chris, you wrote the article. What do we know?
Right. So Rian Johnson gave a pretty in-depth interview with Yahoo, or at least as in-depth as it can be without giving too much away. And he was basically just talking about how he and his producer sat down with Lucasfilm, and they basically went over exactly just what they were going to reveal, you know, in trailers and marketing, and what they would not reveal, what they would just keep secret. And they call it the no-fly list of just things that under no circumstances will be revealed in any sort of way. And he was just talking about how it was just a fascinating process because, you know, it's just something that for years he had heard about. Now he was actually on the inside working you know, on that sort of that spoilery details.
See, this is refreshing to me to know that a filmmaker is involved in this process of the marketing and that they are, you know, sitting down and deciding what is too spoiler. What do we keep out of the marketing? What do we keep out of the toys? What do we not show until the movie is coming out on, you know, Blu-ray and DVD to protect the audiences? I think it's probably something J.J. Abrams did. Ben, what do you think about this?
I love it. I mean, as somebody who is sort of averse to spoilers in general and tries to go out of my way to avoid, you know, a lot of the TV spots and stuff that I feel is like a little bit excessive when it comes to when, you know, the marketing campaign ramps up right as it gets, you know, the movie gets really, really close. I'm glad that Johnson and his producer have sat down and said, all right, there are some things that, you know, are definitely going to be in theater reveals, and there's no way that any of this stuff is going to be able to leak beforehand, barring, you know, somebody from the inside of Disney leaking it and probably getting fired and sued and all of that crap. So, yeah, it's, you know, I love hearing that there are definitely going to be surprises, even for people who obsessively watch all the trailers. And I know you guys are sort of more in that vein than I am. But so, yeah, I'm glad for me and I'm glad for you, too. I'm glad that even the people who go frame by frame through all the footage, which we tend to do on the site, there's still going to be stuff for us that that we won't know about.
Yeah. The other day we spent 40 minutes dissecting the trailer on an emergency podcast. And you know, at the end of it, I kind of realized that they didn't really show us much. It's a lot of character moments. It doesn't show us any story. I think a lot of this is showing us stuff on Crate, which I think is very early in the film. I could be wrong. I don't think we're getting a big glimpse into the overall story of this film, and that's actually kind of refreshing. It's kind of, I feel like, what they do with TV, like, and Next Week on TV. You know, you're not getting story. You're getting character moments, mostly. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, and it's still good because I think, and I've said this on the emergency podcast, I think if you watch the Star Wars trailer, I think it's edited a little bit deceptively to, even if you are taking it, you know, as it's being presented, I don't think things are going to be happening in that way that we're seeing it, if that makes any sense. But if you listen to my 40-minute podcast with Brad, then you know what I'm talking about. Yes. Moving on. Disney Animation has canceled production of their animated film Gigantic. This happens from time to time in animation, but not that often. Usually things get retooled. Gigantic's one of these productions. It started out as a movie called Giants, and it's Disney's take on Jack and the Beanstalk. And basically it's where Jack befriends the giant, who is like this 12-year-old giant. We learned about it, I think, two D23s ago, so that's like 4 years, 3 years, something like that. It was announced in 2015 officially, and even though it had been in development since 2013, and it seems like they just couldn't get it to work. I know it was retooled. They brought in Inside Out writer Meg LaFleur. LaFleur? I don't know how to pronounce her last name. So I apologize. I know that some of the people that were responsible for Moana, like the writer Jared Bush, I think is his name, was brought on to this project, and they were trying to make it work. Walt Disney Animation Group president Ed Catmull issued a statement to The Hollywood Reporter saying, "It's impossible to know when we begin a project how the creative process will unfold. And sometimes, no matter how much we love an idea or how much heart goes into it, we find that it just isn't working. With Gigantic, we've come to that point. And although it's a difficult decision, we are ending active development for now. We are focusing our energies on another project that will that has been in the works, which we'll be sharing more about soon, now set for Thanksgiving 2020. We don't know anything about the project. I will tell you that Byron Howard, the co-director of Zootopia, just started following me on Twitter, minutes after this announcement. So is that related? Could he be the one that's directing this mystery project? Perhaps. He says active development for now. When Disney has canceled projects like this, it's rare that they've, you know, gone back into the vault and, you know, found a new take on them. That has happened. Disney was working on a project called The Snow Queen, which many years later they went back into the vault and retooled as a film called Frozen, which everybody loved. I got to see some early, I think, animatics or storyboards footage from Gigantic at D23. And I think they even played a song from the composers of Frozen, and it wasn't very good. I could tell right then that I was not impressed. So I don't know. I'm not sure how to feel about this. Were either of you excited about Gigantic? Is this bad news for you?
Chris, what do you think?
I had never heard of the project until I saw it got canceled. So I'm not too broken up over it. I am a little surprised just because I can't remember the last time I remember a Disney project like this being canceled. Like off the top of my head, I can't remember anything. I remember a lot of things being retooled, like The Last Dinosaur, the Pixar film, got heavy retooling. I remember that. But for them to just outright cancel it does seem like kind of a big deal. I don't remember that happening that often.
Wasn't there one about a gecko, a Pixar project about a gecko that got scrapped?
Yeah, that was a Pixar project that was called Newt. There's also another project recently called The King of Elves, which is based on, I think, a fairy tale or a short story. And that was canceled by Disney Animation, I think, 7 or 8 years ago. But, I actually thought there wasn't that many projects canceled. But if you search, if you do a Google search for, animated projects canceled by Disney, there's a long legacy of this. There's a long legacy of this happening throughout the decades. But it doesn't happen that often. It's, every, I want to say, 5, 6 years, 7 years.
For me, it's refreshing that they would just decide to do that instead of just pushing forward. Because it has to be easier for them. They put enough money into this. It had to be easier to just put out a crappy movie, right? Instead of admitting that they didn't have it. And I feel like it would be so much easier for them to just finish development, go forward down this road that they've already gone, halfway down or more, and just put out a movie that they didn't believe in because they know that it's a Disney animated movie and it would make money. So I'm actually sort of like, okay, well, good move, Disney. Like I'm applaud their decision to actually do the, the creatively correct move and just abandon something when they know for a fact that the story isn't working.
Yeah. This film was originally going to come out in 2018. It was bumped back to 2020, so that shows how far along in development they were. This idea was something that was pitched in 2013, so it's been in development for 4 years, 4.5 years. That's quite some time. Usually an animated film takes 5 years from pitch to final cut, or at least from what I've heard, these computer animated films. So you're right. They were far down in development. I don't think they were in the animation process. They were still in the storyboarding animatics kind of phase, I think. But it is good to see that them willing to, I'm betting they spent many millions of dollars on this project, and it's being abandoned because of, artistic integrity.
Yeah.
And actually, I'm not sure what you guys think of this, but I'm actually more excited these days. I used to be a Pixar fanatic, and I'm more excited these days for what Walt Disney Animation has been producing than what Pixar has been producing. It almost seems like John Lasseter I know he's still at both studios, but it seems like he's been putting his effort into Walt Disney Animation more and making that back to the prestige that it once was. A move like this is commendable. Very commendable.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's get to Blade Runner 2049. We're going to step into the spoiler room. If you have not seen Blade Runner 2049, turn back now. Turn off the podcast. Don't continue any further because we're going to be talking spoilers in the spoiler room. Chris, you wrote the story up for SlashFilm.com basically about the Blade Runner 2049 ending. The screenwriters revealed secrets of that memorable final scene, including alternate takes. What do we know?
Right. So there were two writers in the film. There was Hampton Fancher, who also co-wrote the original Blade Runner. And then so he wrote a draft, and then Michael Green came in and basically rewrote his draft. And the ending of the film, as it is now, was not in Hampton Fancher's draft. Michael Green is the one who basically added that. And so, yeah, they you know, they went over several ways to do it. Some of the ways had dialogue in it. Well, and some of the scenes.
Before we get into that, let's talk about what is the ending of Blade Runner 2049.
Okay, so...
I mean, I'm not sure if we're going to be telling people that I have not seen the film. I'm not sure the point. Right. Well, yeah, let's just say what the ending is anyways.
Okay. Do you want me to do it?
Yeah, okay. Go for it.
All right, so basically, the whole movie, it's based around Sean Young's character from the first film had a child. And, you know, it's a miracle child, like a replicant, a.k.a. a robot, had a baby. And Deckard, Harrison Ford's character, is the father. And the whole movie is basically Ryan Gosling trying to find both the child and also Deckard. And for a period, Ryan Gosling thinks he is the child. But basically, the child has been it's this scientist who's been basically sequestered in this chamber for like 30 years because she's been led to believe she has this immune disease that keeps her from being in the outside world. And so at the very end of the movie, after everything has happened, Ryan Gosling brings Harrison Ford's character to finally see his daughter. And he hasn't seen her, you know, in 30 years, basically. And it's this really... emotional moment. It got to me a lot, where basically Harrison Ford goes into the room where she's in and she has her back to him and he puts his hand on the glass, and it's all done pretty much silently. And the way Harrison Ford sells that scene is, I think, like the best acting of Harrison Ford's career. And it's this completely silent moment, and just this look he gives that's just surprisingly emotional, for especially for a film like this, which isn't exactly, you know, an overly emotional film, and the first film isn't either. It's a very cold, analytical sort of film. So that's the way it basically ends. Personally, I think it's a pretty clear-cut ending, but apparently I'm wrong and people are reading a lot into it. And part of the story that I wrote up was that Mark Millar has this whole theory about how the whole film is sort of a fake memory that's been implanted into Deckard's head, because he's operating under the assumption that Deckard is also a replicant, which this film doesn't say one way or the other whether it's true. And so, yeah, that's basically his concept, that Deckard has been, I guess, imagining the whole movie, which...
And you hate this theory.
Oh, I loathe it. To me, this is literally the equivalent of, you know, the cliched, it was all a dream ending, which I don't know why anyone would like that, because to me that robs the entire film of any like weight it had. So like, if the whole movie didn't happen, then nothing matters. Like, why would I want to even watch a movie like that where nothing matters? I mean, every once in a while you can get away with it, like, you know, The Usual Suspects, where the whole story was made up, so to speak. But for that to be in this film, I don't think it works at all. And one of the reasons Mark Millar gives is Ryan Gosling's character, he's originally called Kay, and then he changes his name to Joe. And Millar's thing is like, oh, Joe and Kay make joke, which I think is really stupid. I honestly think if it doesn't fit with the tone of the movie at all. The movie is very, very serious. So if they're really trying to say, oh, his character name means joke, I don't buy it. So that's, again, I'm not gonna take away from anyone who wants to believe that. If you want to have your own theories, that's fine. But personally,
see, I love theories that make you reconceptualize a movie, but this one doesn't seem to have any merit. It just seems so ridiculous to me. It doesn't seem, I don't know, it's just so the evidence for it is so thin, so very thin.
Yeah, I think Chris is right. It completely undercuts Ryan Gosling's entire arc, which, like, he has, and, you know, the movie sort of shifts to Deckard's perspective in the back, you know, the back half, the back 40 minutes or whatever. But Gosling's character goes on a journey that is relevant and interesting and compelling all his own. And for him to be just a made up cog in this wheel just to get Deckard to that place doesn't really make much sense, nor does the fact that this woman, the daughter who's been in this room, constructs all of these elaborate memories of Gosling's character's life that Deckard doesn't see, but we, the audience, do see throughout the whole film. It just it seems like nonsensical to me. Yeah.
And I do want to say that the ending of this movie is kind of what I thought The Force Awakens was going to be before going into it to see it. I thought, you know, Rey was going to end up believing that she was the daughter of either Luke or Han, and that, you know, in that movie or the next movie, and this could still be it. It could still, she becomes, you know, obsessed with the idea that she is related to them in some way and finds out that that is not the case. Not to bring everything back to Star Wars, guys, but but I don't know. That was just in my head before going to Force Awakens, and that turned out not to be the case, at least thus far. So what are the alternate versions of this ending?
Right. So there's not a lot of detail about the alternate. Michael Green says there is basically maybe one more extra shot in there between Deckard and his daughter. And there was maybe a few more lines added to basically flesh out the scene. But he says, and I agree with, the way it turns out, you know, works much better, where, you know, it's minimal dialogue. It's, you know, the scene basically speaks for itself, or at least I thought it did. But, you know, apparently not. Maybe they should have added a few more lines, because then you wouldn't have, you know, these theories that are reading much too much into the ending than I think they should be.
By the way, I wanted to ask you guys, because it seemed clear to me who Deckard's offspring was earlier in the film, like, you know, maybe 10, 15 minutes before that, the ending. Was that reveal to you at that very last scene, or was it in that flashback scene previously? Because one of the people I saw the movie with, they didn't realize it until the end, that last scene of the movie. Does that make sense?
Oh, I think it's revealed sort of a little earlier than the point where he physically, like, walks up the stairs and into the room. I think, you know, as the audience, that this is actually his daughter, right?
There's a part where Ryan Gosling has this sort of flashback to the scene. And he remembers and he says all the best memories are hers. And that sort of is the big giveaway that, oh, this memory is hers and that she's the daughter. But yeah, I did get it before that last scene, definitely.
Yeah, it was just interesting because my friend had a totally different experience of that last scene, because that was the revelation to him at that moment. And I almost wonder, should they have done that flashback earlier? All the greatest memories are hers. Would it have been a better payoff to have it pay off in that last moment?
I think it's good as it is, because you understand the sacrifice that Ryan Gosling's character is making by getting Deckard to that place. And if if that was a reveal at the very end when he physically walks through the door, you might not even know what Officer K is trying to do, you know, where he's trying to take him. And it seems like by establishing that as his goal, you get the satisfaction of watching him achieve that goal, right?
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah,
no, I definitely agree. It was just something I was thinking about, because it was just interesting to come out of a movie and have a totally different experience of that last scene than someone else that you watched the movie with. And that doesn't happen that often. The more time that has passed since seeing this movie last week, the more I think about the movie. I'm not sure it's not one of my favorite movies of all time. It's not a masterpiece, but it's definitely in my top 10 of this year. And I'm just loving, you know, swimming in it, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, that does it for today's edition of Slash Film Daily. You can find more of my work on slashfilm.com, all these articles on slashfilm.com. You can find me on Twitter at slashfilm. You can find Ben at Ben Pears. You can find Chris. What is your Twitter name?
I really got to get a better Twitter name. It's C Evangelista 413. It's all one word.
Yes. And you can find this podcast published every weekday on iTunes, Google Play, Overcast, all the popular podcast apps. Please subscribe. Go to iTunes, give us a review, a rating. That helps us out quite a bit. Tell your friends, and keep sending us questions to the mailbag, peter@slashfilm.com. I promise we will eventually get to the questions. It's just been a busy time here. And thank you all for listening.